little fade down on Brian Eno there, and we're very pleased to have in the studio with us today Mike, who operates a local business taking care of the Mac people. So what would you like to say about that, Mike?
It's been an adventure so far. We've been there about 5 years.
It's Mike McGowan, and just so you know, ncitymacs.com is your website. And for our listeners out there, we do want to let you know that you can call in today and ask any Mac-related questions you might have. And if Mike can help, he'll be able to answer those. And as always, if we don't know the answer here, we'll usually try to figure it out for you. You can check out the Zentech website at zen.kvmr.org. You can send us mail during the show or anytime to zen@kvmr.org. And we'll try to take your email questions also. I can't turn around because I don't have on my fancy pants headset right now. Can you read the translator information?
We forgot that not only are we blasting out at 89.5 million cycles a second for 3,000 feet up on top of Banner Mountain, but we're also doing it from Mount Pluto, I think it is.
Yes.
The translator at Mount Pluto for our listeners in the Truckee Tower Basin is K286AN Truckee. 105.1, and we do welcome your calls from there. The toll-free number will do it from there, 1-800-355-5867.
And locally, 265-9555. We've got our wonderful Comrex system working on the computer today, and we've got at least two people here with our computers. And so, again, we can take your questions. We can help you with things.
The thing that got my attention about Mike is that his website offers courses to which you can go to study things. Things about Macs. What kind of things, Mike?
Oh, just about anything. There's a lot of kind of self-help information on the website. There's a Q&A section and a lot of what to do if you run into problems.
Now, what's of importance to us is you are a local business, and we've been gaily saying that people should go to Arden Fair and Roseville and all the rest of it. You're right here in town. Where are you?
I'm on Nevada City Highway across from Meeks.
And it says N City Mac on the...
It actually says the Mac Shack out in front.
The Mac Shack.
Says
okay.
The Mac Shack.
Okay. Now, when I visited you there to see that, indeed, Nevada County does have a Mac person, there was a little set up for people to do learning of a Mac. If I turned up there and I said, my ancient auntie who knows nothing has been given a Mac and an Internet connection, what would you do with her?
Well, we'd probably get acquainted with the operating system, try using your mail program and make sure everything's working. I have a guest machine there. If you like, you can sit down and go online and explore the website if you like. There's a little bit of getting used to the Mac OS for people coming from the PC side. It's quite a bit different. I actually have an easier time teaching a total novice than someone who's used to running Windows.
Habits die hard.
They do.
Now, what proportion of people would you say are switchies, and how many are newbies that you see?
Oh, I have no way of answering that.
Apart from those ones that are looking kind of red in the face and that you know which ones they are, right?
They're the ones that rushed out and got Vista.
Right. Whoa. Now, there's an interesting issue right there, and it's become an issue around here, which is those people who want to buy a new PC now are ending up with this operating system called Vista just around the time when XP has settled down after about 5 years. So are you actually finding people that are saying, you know, this new Vista thing, I don't want to do it, so I wanted to do the Mac? Are you getting people driven to you from not liking Vista, do you think?
I've had a few in there. I've had a couple of people who were early adopters of Vista who found out that their AMD processors weren't recognized and
that's not good.
Having other problems.
How many people do you find then that actually take their computers back and go over to the Mac? So they just about had it and use, which we always recommend, your 15-day window of opportunity to say this ain't going to work. Do you find many people doing that?
I can't say a lot. Mm. I get one or two people a week in there that are usually pretty well frustrated by the time they come to the shop.
Right. And now, most people using Macs like PCs these days, I'm assuming, are on some kind of high-speed connection. Or do you still have to deal with dial-up issues with Mac people?
Nevada County has a lot of people on dial-up still. There aren't a lot of people willing to pay the $50-$60 a month for broadband. And there aren't a lot of people that have that option aside from perhaps satellite. So, yeah, dial-up is still a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I was just thinking, wouldn't it be wonderful if you had a Mac, automatically you could get broadband? I'd switch in a heartbeat because I'm in Alta Sierra right off of Highway 49, and I still cannot get DSL out there. And I'm renting, so I'm not going to invest in the equipment to buy or lease the satellite equipment. And we don't happen to have, in our little street, which isn't part of Alta Sierra proper, we don't happen to have the cable company coming through. I believe it's Seabridge or... I know a few people who have the Seabridge cable.
Oh, is it Seabridge or Wave?
Wild Blue is another one.
There's Seabridge, a satellite system. Somebody in Auburn told me there is a new cable internet service there going over the existing cable. It's got something like Wave. I should have looked it up some more.
Okay. In Auburn, that may be, but as far as I know, and I don't know anybody who has cable TV there, but I do know some folks that have the Seabridge. At least that's their email address, Seabridge, I believe.
It's a funny situation down there. They appear to have several cable internet companies down there.
Yeah.
Mike, you had an interesting experience with the fact that you initially had DSL where you are. Is that right? And the rate wasn't too good?
I signed up with DSL as soon as I moved into the shop there in 2001, and I have to say it has never been faster than it was back then.
Oh, so it got worse from then on?
It got worse. It dropped to about 1.5 megs was my top speed at the time. It dropped to about half that.
Mm-hmm. Over a period of what, a year or a few months?
It took 2 or 3 years. And so I switched to Comcast, and guess what?
It's a funny thing. I think where Mike is, which is on that part of I think it's East Main, it's near the end of the service as a distance goes from, I guess, up here on Spring Street, where the switch is. It's about a couple miles from here, I guess. And that's about this. What did you get for a service distance? It's something like, it's in thousands of feet or kilofeet or something
like 17,000 feet. But I'm wondering, because it sounds like you're there at the top of the Brunswick Basin. Do you know where your service is coming from? Is it coming down from the Nevada City area, or is it coming up from the Brunswick Basin?
That's a good question.
Yeah, there's probably no way of knowing. I know it's near the end of a line, though.
Now, you're talking about DSL.
DSL,
yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about DSL is that your top speed is a known fact. You can do what's called a sunshine test on the line, which will tell you what the absolute top speed of your phone line is going to be. You don't have that option with cable that I'm aware of.
There is an issue with cable, as I understand it, and one of these days we should get somebody from Comcast to talk about it, which is, as I understand it, it's what they call peered technology that goes back to a central point. So the more people that are using it, the slower the service goes.
And I have seen that down in the Sacramento area and the Bay Area.
So you better hope you've got not too many teenagers in the neighborhood downloading all stink out of the Internet.
Now, was access to the Internet and the speed that you got that access an issue for you? I find that for most people, they may talk about speed and think faster is better, but for the things that they're going to do, which is just standard interneting, that shouldn't really hurt. And I've even seen the slowest DSL connection download a 40 or 50 megabyte file within 3 or 4 minutes when you're talking, you know, days possibly on dial-up.
Well, a lot of things just are not possible on dial-up, not the least of which are our software updates.
Right.
All right, yeah.
When you have 10, 11, 12 files coming at you, all of which are huge, it's just not feasible on dial-up. So I do have some people bringing machines in for updates on my broadband, so it is an issue. I do some streaming video sometimes. Speed is pretty crucial there.
Okay.
Oh, I know what we're going to ask. We're sort of going off into broadband land, which always becomes an issue up here because we're a rural kind of area. I asked Mike before the show what the preferred applications were, what the chosen programs people use, for example, for email. And you did recommend the native Apple Mac Mail program, right?
Cleverly named Mail.
That actually makes it very difficult. You go, what program are you using? You go, I don't know, Mail. And they may not actually mean that. So that and what else? Anything else?
I think Firefox and Thunderbird have become quite popular. They're both excellent programs.
Mm-hmm. What are the choices for Mail on an Apple computer? I thought it was Entourage. Is that not Mail? Is that something else?
Well, you can run Entourage.
So Thunderbird, Entourage, the resident program called Mail.
Yeah.
I think Opera has an email program. Don't they? I've never used Opera, but it's been around for a while.
Never looked into it. I use Opera as a browser only.
By the way, I was wrong the other day. That's never happened before.
Oh.
As you know, but they do make Opera for the Mac, and it's up to version 9 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Mike did mention an interesting thing. If you don't know what Entourage is, it's the incarnation of Outlook from the PC world, but it ain't Outlook. It's kind of different. And it's got mailboxes, and you can read your email with it. Mike mentioned something kind of curious about what happens to Entourage when this... well, what happens with any email program if you don't do your housekeeping? What was that about?
That was a machine. A woman was complaining that it was getting kind of slow, and last count I saw, she had something over 10,000 emails in her email program. Never emptied the trash, never emptied the sent folder. There was a spam folder as well, and I have no idea how much was in that. But that'll certainly slow you down.
Now, what was the remedy in that case? And there's a reason I'm asking this. Was it simply to move things to other folders, or just delete all heck out of stuff that was out of date?
Well, I don't go through people's files, so I have no idea what was on that computer. The only reason I know the count of emails was that I was importing your mail from Entourage to the mail application. And that was when I saw the count. And when the data transfer took over an hour, I kind of lost interest. But the thing to do, I think a lot of it has to do with housekeeping and personal habits and your inbox. As soon as you get your mail, you should file it away, trash it, delete it, do whatever you have to do with it, but keep your inbox empty. And there are ways to export your mail in a file. If you have too many,
you can save it onto your computer or out of the program onto your computer.
Well, there's actually a pretty clever way to convert it on a Mac to a text edit file.
Okay.
All the links remain intact, all the graphics remain intact, and you wind up with one very long document of emails.
Oh, it's a nonstop screed, so this would be like 10,000 emails long, complete.
One long screen, yes.
Yes, we can handle calls in a minute. There was something I was going to ask before we field calls, and this is very important because it comes up in the PC world. How do you get, what's the easiest way you get people to back up their Macs?
The easiest way is someone who has lost a hard drive.
They're really going to find a way to do it.
That's the easiest. That's when it comes home and you start to realize that a backup is definitely a necessity these days.
Okay, so they're full of missionary zeal. What do you say to them?
Well, some people back up individual files. They have their Photoshop file that they've been working on for days or weeks, and they will back that up.
Manually or automatically or what?
Oh, drag a copy to a CD.
Uh-huh.
But probably the best thing to do these days is to clone the entire hard drive, operating system, applications, documents, and all.
Uh-huh.
And probably one of the easiest and cheapest programs for doing that is called SuperDuper.
Is that a freebie?
It is a freebie. If you register it, it unlocks automated functions where you can time a backup at daily, weekly, whatever is convenient for you.
So the free one is manual. The one you pay for can be scheduled. Is that it?
Correct.
And this is Mike going on to an external hard drive.
An external hard drive equal to or bigger than your original hard drive, so there's enough space for everything.
And that's a bootable volume or not? Can you actually fire off it?
Yes, you wind up with a bootable volume, so you have the added benefit of being able to repair service alternate volumes.
Ah, now it'll only take one snapshot, is that correct? So in other words, you don't get multiple shots from yesterday and the day before. It's like one single backup at the instant when the backup job went off.
It clones everything the first time, and after that, it is any changed files. It's called a smart update.
So the first time will take a long time to get your 40 gigs or 80 gigs or whatever it is, and the next time, if you just change 2 or 3 megabytes, that's it.
After that, it's pretty quick.
Are you doing notes on this, Mr. Glenn? I can if you...
I am. I don't see my... Oh, there's my edit button. I'm not real familiar with this, so
we should point
I
out that it's a good moment to say, you know, we got just the spiffiest site in the world made by the most brilliant webmaster in the world, me. So when you quit laughing and you go to zen.kvmar.org and click shows... We're all about content, not presentations. It's just information out there. Glenn is typing it up now.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you again, Mike, if you'll tell me the name of that program that you use for doing that clone.
SuperDuper with an exclamation point at the end.
There it is. So it is.
So SuperDu.
P-E-R.
P-E-R.
Exclamation mark. And the website is shirt-pocket.com/superduper. It's one of those funny company names.
Shirt pocket software, yes. Yeah.
Excellent. We're going to try that out, see how that works. So for the Mac world, you want to clone a drive as a backup. SuperDuper is your tool of choice. Excellent. We're going to try that.
Well, there are others.
Right. This one does it for you.
This one does it for me. I've been using Retrospect for a lot of years, too. That's about a $60 program, and it works quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of other freebies that aren't coming to mind right now.
Now, what I've seen about Retrospect is if you buy some types of drives with a push button on them, they actually give you a sort of freebie version of this Dance Retrospect, right?
I think so. I kind of tend to avoid those one-button drives.
Right. So in this case, you have to click something on the desktop, and it says synchronize or clone now, or what does it do?
Well, the big question there is what that drive is formatted for. If the drive is formatted for Windows, which would probably be the majority of users
right.
out there, you can run a backup, but you're going to have issues. So
it won't be a bootable volume, probably. Is that true?
That and a couple of other minor gotchas.
Does it warn you when you run the super duper software? Does it say to you this drive is not formatted in such a way as it will be a bootable volume? Does it tell confusing but truthful statements?
I honestly can't answer that because every time I've done a backup, I've always formatted it first.
Right. Now, what we're talking about here is that drives that you buy off the shelf, as opposed to like LaCie drives which are sold for Macs, drives that are sold off the shelf are usually formatted what they call FAT32 so that Windows can read them and Macs can read them. And your ideal situation if you're an all-Mac place is to format it with, what is it called, HFS or HFS Plus or something like that.
It's called Disk Utilities. It's in the Utilities
right.
folder. It comes with the operating system, and it will erase and format a volume.
So we're not responsible for what you just said, because I'm going to go, yeah, blow away 10 years of photographs on my hard drive. So, yeah, it'll empty that drive out.
Well, yes, it will, even an empty one.
an empty drive, yeah. So ideally for using this super-duper or any such backup, you make the volume a similar file format to what the Mac would use, which is known as HFS. Not that you need to know that. But
I did run across a backup drive that a client had that was formatted PC. I'm not sure if it was FAT32 or what it was.
Right.
But we could see the files. We
mm-hmm.
could read the files. We couldn't copy the files.
Ooh.
Oh, weird.
It was pretty much reduced to a copy and paste situation, and that's not what you want in a backup.
By the way, I should point out, and if you've seen this, if you get a FAT32 drive that's been sitting on a PC for a long time and you plug it into a Mac for the first time, for a period of about 5 or 10 minutes, like a hound dog, the Mac will hunt through that hard drive and add funky-looking file names in there so that it can index the files, and they've usually got little dots in front of them.
Hmm.
You seen that? It happens on flash drives
no,
and things?
No, never.
So I've seen a situation where you plug a FAT32 drive into a Mac, and it doesn't appear to be usable for about 5 or 10 minutes, and the drive light just goes and goes and goes and goes and goes, and the Mac is indexing the FAT32 system.
Is that
it doesn't tell you it's doing that. It just does it.
Does it say DS Store? Is that the name of the
That's
file?
That's the ones. Yeah, DS Store and dot Apple double and dot. There's all sorts of weird names, and the Mac is doing it so that it can store resource and data forks, which Macs use and PCs don't. So don't
mm-hmm.
be frightened when you see garbage all over your drive. Hey, do you think it's time for calls? Would that be
yeah,
fun?
We did just lose a caller, so
oh,
please
so sorry.
Do call us back. That's okay. And we've got our caller on the air right now. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
I've called a few times before. I've got old Mac equipment, and the highest operating system without major patches and things, and I've heard it's more hassle than it should be, is 9.1 is what I'm using. And I'm just wondering, you were talking about dial-up before. I have dial-up, and it's really bad here. I'm in Tahoma by Lake Tahoe, and is there anything I can do besides dial up with my machine? As I remember, I looked into it, and I believe it's the 50 megahertz bus speed that's the problem. Can you tell me, can I do anything more than dial up, or?
Well, you can do anything you want. The problem is the operating system.
Right.
Running OS 9, and the last of OS 9 was 9.2.2, which you can certainly update to.
Yeah, I hear there's a lot of problems with that, though, and I really have no need for it at this point, unless maybe that has something to do with doing something other than dial-up.
I'm not aware of any problems with the 9.2.2 updates.
Huh.
The problem you're going to encounter is that your choice of email clients and web browsers is going to be very limited.
Yeah.
They're going to be way out of date.
Yeah.
You're going to encounter all kinds of Java and JavaScript
right.
and all sorts of flash errors, and you're just not going to have a good time of it.
On the Internet, you mean?
On the Internet.
Yeah, Yeah, I realize that, and I am having some of those problems, but I'm not a big internet surfer or anything. It's just is there, from what my understanding from before, I've forgotten, to be honest, but when I looked into it, it seemed that there was not much else I could do than dial up because of that 50 megahertz bus bottleneck or something.
Which machine is this?
It's one of those Franken-Macs, a bit. Anyway, it's a Power Macintosh 7500-100 that's been updated to a G3-400.
Oh, okay.
So it's pretty old.
Yes, it is.
And until I hit the lottery or something, I'm stuck with it.
you pretty much, even just for email and just for internet, you pretty much have to have something capable of running OS X.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't think that machine's going to do it.
Well, it probably could, but it just from I belong to some Mac users groups, and it just sounds like there's too many problems. I don't even want to try it because it runs very well with what I needed to do at the moment other than internet.
I think the conclusion is you can get there from here, but you can't do anything when you get there.
Yeah.
No. that's sad. Just out of curiosity, do you have a nice flat panel monitor?
I do have one. I have one.
You do?
Wait, flat panel, that's just
LCD or
flat, right? It's not like plasma or anything like that, right?
No plasma, no picture tube.
No, they're all CRT, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, well, never mind, there goes that idea.
No, okay.
I was going to say, if you happen to have a nice flat panel machine, you can, or a monitor, you can pick up a Mac Mini for, I think they started $600.
Yeah.
That gets you the operating system, the processor, the speed, the optical drive, and all the gadgets and goodies.
You have to have the flat panel for that, though?
Well, that makes it cost-effective. If you already have a flat panel and you have a keyboard and a mouse, you don't need those things.
It gets complex, but the Mac Mini is sold with a DVI to VGA adapter. And you can get another adapter which goes from VGA to the 15-pin Mac thing. So you end up with this, well, you've got a Franken monster. Who cares anymore?
Right? Yeah, really.
But by the time you spend that money on all those adapters, you can probably go out and get yourself a
first
nice DVI, LCD
Well, I
monitor.
Actually have all the adapters already.
Okay.
So
maybe not the DVI stuff. Is that resident on the older
Macs?
Oh, okay.
Because I have a video card that was already put in here, an ATI card, something, Adion, I forget now.
Oh, Radeon?
Radeon.
Radeon.
Okay, so it's got a VGA, what they call a VGA, where you've got three rows of 15 pins, right?
I'm already running two monitors off that, and I know one of them was a DVI where I got an adapter for that.
So you've gone Franken computer before. I would say you'd be real happy with a Mac Mini. It looked like hell, and people will laugh their heads off, but what the heck?
Nobody comes over. I don't care about that.
And would broadband over satellite work for this fellow, or is this Mac, wouldn't it not be compatible?
I don't think I'd want to go on the internet with a machine that's that old. You have to run OS X and preferably 10.3 or later.
Yeah, okay. It'll do absolutely nothing useful at all at an incredibly high speed. That's like me, really fast but useless.
See, that's what I was wondering, is there's no point in me trying to get a faster connection right with this machine.
I think we vote three thumbs down in the studio.
Yeah, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's what I thought. I couldn't remember. I researched it before, and I'd totally forgotten it all. And I.
Well,
anyway.
We want to thank you very much for calling in.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, take
Bye-bye.
Care.
And a reminder to folks, this is KVMR FM in Nevada City, 89.5 on the airwaves going west towards Sacramento, and 105.1 FM heading up towards the Truckee Tahoe
so
area.
Over the hill there. That's great.
Yeah, we do have a call live on the air, and then we're going to take an email from Fran, and she has a monitor question for us also. Hi, caller. Go ahead.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am.
Okay. It's hard to tell with it. But anyway, all I called was, do you have a favorite repair store that you take your computer to? Do you recommend one?
We can't make recommendations, or we won't make recommendations here. Mike McGowan is from a Mac repair shop here in Nevada City, in citymacs.com, and he's our guest on the air today. I do my own repair as far as PC. I don't work on Macs. I don't know Macs well at all.
Right, and the suggestions, not recommendations, are we mean to put it on the site at some point. There are at least five businesses in town that have been here at least 5 years. Rod's Computers, Haldane Computers.
Haldane Computers.
Comrex.
Comtech
Downtown Graphite. These are PC shops. The Mac Shack, nmacshack. ncitymax.com, excuse me. They're not recommendations. I don't know a whole lot about them. At various points, we have either interviewed or spoken to these people. There's also Full Spectrum Internet, which does computer work in the Brunswick Basin.
As well as provide internet service. They're a service provider
right.
also.
So these are just suggestions you might want to try out. Is that what you're after?
I just want to take someone in, take the machine in to
what type of machine?
It's like the last one. Well, actually, it's just a combination of garbage.
Well, is it a Mac or is it a PC or is it
a PC?
Okay.
Sorry.
So this one's a Franken PC.
No. I don't know what that is.
Like combo stuff. Yeah.
If it's old and you've had to piece it together over the years, that's what we call Franken PC or Franken Mac.
Oh, okay.
And I can almost give you a real good guesstimate as to what it would be to repair something like that, and that is put your money into a new machine.
Okay. Thank you.
Everyone we look at that way, we normally come up with that. That, again, that's my opinion. But you're very welcome. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now. Our standard disclaimer is that everything you hear on the program and from us today is definitely the opinion of the speaker, not that of KVMR at staff, underwriters, board of directors, or other volunteers. So thank
right.
you very much.
And in the studio is Mike McGowan of mm-hmm. the Mac Shack, and you can call him up if you like to talk about things Mac. He is the local Mac resident guy that has a business up here, and we love to interview people that operate businesses right here in our community.
What's your phone number there, Mike?
Phone number is 478-1131.
Okay.
I should probably point out that I am not an Apple certified or authorized service provider. For that, you need to go to the Apple store. There's one in Sacramento. Or to Fry's, perhaps. I hear we're getting a new Fry's in Roseville.
We are.
And you won't be here when it opens, will you, mate?
No.
I hate when that happens. Yeah. Yeah.
And let's go ahead and take this email that we got from Fran. She wrote in and said that she enjoys the show, and she has an iMac OS 10.39. Everything works okay, but there is a line that usually appears two-thirds down the screen. Lately, it has also come up with a white space on the screen about one-third of the way to the line. What do you do about this, and is it harmful to operate the computer with that line appearing there?
That is a video problem, and if I'm not mistaken, that's a well-known video problem. I believe you might be covered under Apple's extended warranty for that.
Okay, it's like one of these recall things where they have a known problem and they'll cover it for a period of time?
That's correct, and Apple's been really good about that. They usually cover such things for at least 3 years. Typically, what they want to do is they want you to bring the machine into an Apple store and start it up so that they can see the symptoms and verify the problem. And at that point, you're probably going to get a new logic board. I'm just guessing. Without seeing the machine, I wouldn't know for sure.
All right. It's on our site, it's Mac Recall. What's important is they give you some instructions when you end up at the Apple site that tell you how to find your serial number and how to put it in. And Alan Stoller here, who's a Mac guy, ran into difficulty by finding his computer was subject to recall, but it was not within that three-year window. And they did not tell him. So they did charge him for it, although it was a recall. So we have to be very careful about stuff like
so
that.
So if you were to take it into a local repair shop, and unfortunately, Mike, you're not a certified repair shop, so I take it Mac or Apple doesn't authorize you to do this sort of thing. So
I don't do any kind of warranty work.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So then the closest one then would be the Apple store, I guess, down in the either of the malls, the Galleria or Arden Fair Mall.
Right.
If you didn't want to send it in and take the chance that you might have to pay for it, they could possibly tell you if you walk in?
You'd hope so. That's not what happened to Alan, I believe. In other words, they did not tell him up front. They just took it in and they said, yeah, that is a recall, and then they charged him for it. So ask about the charge, caller.
And this was after how long?
It was over 3 years. I'm not sure how much over 3 years.
And that was on a laptop, wasn't
it? Yes, it was.
Okay, for Alan.
So watch out. You still there, caller?
No, that wasn't a caller. That was an email.
Oh, well, that's why they're not there.
Yeah, and we're going to go on with our next caller then. Hi, thank you for calling into Zentech. You're live on the air.
Hi, guys. This is Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. Don't you just love it that I keep everybody on the straight and narrow here? How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing okay. This is about my son's PC. My Macs are far older than OS 9. My Macs are ancient, but they're not being used. But anyway, my son has an external Macster 200 gig hard drive.
Okay.
And it's flaked on him, and he's getting a file directory is corrupted or unreadable. And I've been playing around with it. Here's what I've done so far, is I found a utility called get data back utility, and it's able to get in there and cruise around and at least find things. But after 4 days of it accessing the drive, I mean 24 hours a day, accessing a drive, it was about, oh, maybe 55% of the way through it. I gave up. So it can be accessible. It could be the USB interface to it, since it's an external drive.
Right.
So I swapped that for a USB interface that I had on an external read-write drive.
So you physically changed the hard drive into a different enclosure?
Different enclosure.
Okay.
And then I finally took that same drive and stuck it into my daughter's desktop as a second drive in there. And even under that condition, I was still getting the file directories corrupt or unreadable.
Do you know, Jeff, whether this is, we were talking about this with Mike here, FAT32 formatted, does it mention that anywhere?
Yeah, yes. When I, if I can remember now, it's in my head, but that's dangerous. using the get back, there's a get data back utility. There are two versions of, but there's an FAT and there's also a, what's the other one?
NTFS.
NTFS. There's two versions of the utility.
Right.
And the utility does allow me to get to something that it does look at sectors and is able to get through the USB interface to find stuff, but
not in a usable format, right? Screens
right.
and stuff.
And I, you know, after 4 days of accessing it, I wasn't getting very far. And besides, I only have a 20 gig drive in the computer I was hooking up to, so I couldn't do anything with the data if I found it anyway.
Yeah, the reason I was asking, this FAT32 doesn't have a very good, it's like a lowest common denominator, which is why it appears under Mac and it appears under Windows. They can both see it. Because it's a rather inferior file system that's relatively simple, and it has very little redundancy information, very little background information. And if 4 days is what it takes, that's actually not bad going. You may need to leave it another week.
Yeah, and it suddenly, you know, after 3 days of finally, you know, watching it do things, it suddenly dawned on me, even if I was able to find the files,
what could you do with them?
What could I do with them? You know, I can't stuff 200 onto a 20.
True enough.
Now, is this strictly a backup, or has this been an external storage device for your son?
This is his external storage for all of his school stuff that he was using for putting together for his portfolio for after-school presentations at businesses.
Oh, you know what this brings up, Jeff? I think about, 6 months ago, Glenn and I had a telephone interview with a gentleman that does data recovery on hard drives. If you've got critical stuff on your hard drive, and I mean stuff that's worth hundreds of dollars to you rather than any sort of sentimental things, and the hard drive starts to play up, you need to turn it off as soon as possible and not let things run on it for a long time. It will physically damage the drive.
Right.
If the drive is in what would you call moribund mode.
And the I don't remember the name of the company that we had interviewed when we had them on. They were down in the Folsom area. And it is expensive. Data recovery is expensive. That's one thing we need to tell you right out the gate. But they do a test initially, and then they report back to you, I believe, for $75 or $100 fee if they can do anything. And if there's some place that can, that would be the place.
Yeah, atdatarecovery.com was the one. Oh, excuse me, adrdatarecovery.com.
ADR?
Yeah, adrdatarecovery.com.
Well, and if I can butt in here, there's also Drive Savers. They're in the Bay Area. They're excellent.
Okay,
drive savers. Okay. If we can have a note of that. This is only when things get real critical because none of this is inexpensive. Now, you've had to send Mac drives down there to get the data off. Is that right, Mike?
I have. They actually give my clients a little bit of a discount sometimes. I think that's the initial evaluation. But it's also quite expensive, and it forces you to put a dollar amount on your data.
And these are the candidates for backup solutions when they return, right?
They will have backups when they return, yes, because they have spent $1,000 or more recovering their data.
So and the lesson here for your son is that's his external storage drive. You need to back that up, too, at some point.
Yeah, that kind of brings up one of my little questions for the industry. Is there such thing as an inexpensive RAID array for that purpose, that one has an external, instead of a single external drive, have an external RAID array?
Windows XP can do it. It's not easy. If you're in the Mac camp, have you actually dealt with RAID arrays in the Mac?
Sure, you can. Sure, you can do that. There are a number of options. Of course, cheap is a relative term.
yeah.
In terms of storage capacity, I mean, dollars per gigabyte, hard drives are pretty cheap, and that's probably your cheapest backup option of any would be a RAID array.
Right, and in the Mac it does it in software, so you can go to Disk Tools and say, make this new drive and add it to an array to which the internal drive belongs. Have you ever done that, though?
I don't have too many clients that are that deeply invested in
You should point out it's not actually a backup. What it is it's supposed to increase the availability and make it redundant. And the third letter of the RAID is inexpensive, but that's a subjective sort of subjective thing. So, yeah, there are hardware solutions. Glenn found, for some low price, actually a motherboard that had SATA, serial ATA RAID, on board. So you'd give the machine two drives, and the hardware would take care of making it RAID. And they, as far as Windows was concerned, it was a single drive, but it was actually a pair of them on board.
Okay. I believe in that was one running, it was an ECS motherboard running a Intel Pentium 4 chip. There might have been an AMD. I'm an AMD fan myself, so that's what I would recommend.
A cooling fan.
I can cool things down, too. Jeff, and just to give you a hint, we've seen upwards of $2,500 for this data recovery.
He's cruising around his school with an external hard drive trying to see if he can poke around and grab copies.
Not a bad idea, a bad idea. So. Okay, well, thank you so much for calling in.
Okay, in the studio we have Mike, who can answer questions about Macs, although there could be many questions. Those about Mac are relevant for our guest today. Mike of ncitymacs.com. No hyphens, no periods, no nothing.
With our next caller, we've got you live on the air. Hi, caller.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Would you take a Windows call?
Oh, Mike, will you take a Windows call?
I know nothing of Windows. You guys will have to
help us. You help us out on the last one.
Yeah, I'm not expecting your feature Mac person.
We can handle a brief question. How's that?
Fair enough.
Okay. And there's a gospel singing group forming in Grass Valley, and one of the folks has a program, a PC program, that scores in harmony. However, her only access is using a mouse on a virtual keyboard. I have a Casio that has 5-pin DIN MIDI sockets, and I have a Pavilion Media Center.
Okay.
With no special sound card other than what came with the machine.
Right, but it has got USB, I'm assuming.
It does.
And it does have on the back a 15-pin what they call game port. Is that true?
I believe so.
And do you or don't you have a cable that goes from the Casio to the PC?
I don't.
You can get two sorts. I would advise the USB sort.
Okay.
And it's made by, I think Creative Labs makes it, and I found it out on eBay for, I don't know, $29 or something like that.
Okay.
And you run a cable from the USB port, install the software, and connect the other end up to your Casio keyboard.
Right.
Then the software you've got, the scoring software, is supposed to be able to address external MIDI ports, as they call them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's supposed to do the trick for you. It depends a lot on the software. I'd be very surprised if the scoring software didn't talk to external MIDI ports.
Yes. Well, actually, it does in the documentation, and that's why we are attempting to see if my machine would work. So, yeah, so I've been talked to HP. It was a little bit difficult, but from what I can understand, there is some type of a MIDI.
Oh, yeah. There's two types. There's an older sort, which strangely plugs into the 15-pin game port where you normally plug the joystick in. I would avoid that.
Yeah.
The smart sort these days to get, if you've got a choice, is USB. And it doesn't matter if it's the older USB. MIDI data is relatively slow. It's 115 kilobits per second.
So let me ask Paul, can we use then any USB cable that has the plugs that would go from the Casio keyboard, or does it have to be something specific from either Creative Labs or Casio?
It doesn't. MIDI is a musical instrument digital interface. It's a standard, meaning it doesn't have to be from Casio and it doesn't have to be from HP. And the smart sort is a more recent design, which has a USB plug on one end, a little kind of wart or lump in the cable, which has some electronics, and it actually has two DIN plugs on the end because you have MIDI in and MIDI out.
Right.
So you can send stuff to the keyboard, and the keyboard can send stuff to the computer. That's why it looks that way. I'm just looking online now. Do you use eBay at all?
I have in the past.
Or there's other places. It's actually called a USB MIDI adapter. I would hunt for that. I don't have specific recommendations, but I happen to know that... Actually, you know what? It's not Creative Labs I'm aware of. It's the other company, Monterey or... not Turtle Beach. Who makes all that stuff?
MIDI Man,
something like that. Yeah, if you go to MIDI Man, which is a website, I'm sure you'll find out. It's just a USB MIDI adapter, and that will do it for you.
This keyboard piano has three MIDI out. One is called through.
Right.
One is called in and then out.
Sure. So to your computer, you connect the in and out, and the DIN plugs are labeled out and in. So in goes to out, and out goes to in, and through
right.
goes somewhere else if you've got another one.
I
and Mike's blinking there, but yeah, it's all in and out, in one ear and out the other.
Okay. So it sounds to me like a first step would be then to check out eBay.
Yeah, or I'm doing a Google search for USB MIDI, and there's all sorts of vendors sell it. You shouldn't need to pay more than $25, and you will not be subject to inferior quality. It's digital. It either works or it doesn't, and you can pick your color.
There you go.
Okay.
Thanks so much for calling in.
Okay, thanks, guys.
You know, we've got four more phone calls lined up, and if we can take them very quickly, we can do that. A reminder that you are listening to KVMR FM Nevada City, and our special guest today in studio, Michael McGowan with NCityMax.com, a local Mac repair service, custom software and solutions for Mac platform. Let's go to our next caller here. Good afternoon, caller. You're live on the air. Welcome.
Hello. I am running a PowerBook G4.
Okay.
And I run Pro Tools, which is a... audio recording program.
A very high-end audio recording
yes,
program.
One of the best, for mm-hmm. sure. Now, I've been using it on my tower. I have a G4 tower as well. I just got this laptop about a week ago. And I got a PCI expansion deck, too, which hooks up through the PCMCIA card. It's made by Magma.
I'm glad you had all those initials down because I could never remember them.
Oh, I just called my friend who's got a Mac and got all the real legitimate terms for him. So
cool, there you go.
I'm all ready for you guys. Now, it's all hooked up. It's my Pro Tools interface. My Digio 1 is powered up. But when I go to open up Pro Tools, it gives me an unable to create a DAE deck. My question is, how do I see if my PCI expansion deck is being recognized by my Mac? Because then if I know it is being recognized, then I know that my problem probably lies in Pro Tools.
Okay, are you looking at the machine?
Yeah, I'm right here right now.
If you go under the Apple menu to About This Mac,
yep,
and then you click the More Info button.
Okay, I'm there.
That brings up the system profile.
Okay.
Somewhere in the left column there, you will see, let's see now, this is that would be under PCI?
I have PC cards and PCI cards.
Well, one or the other.
Okay, I'll go to PCI card.
It should show up in there someplace.
I got, let's see, the first one is a PCI bridge, and then I have another PCI bridge, then I have a PCI 106B4318.
Is that the card you're dealing with?
How would I find, should it say on the card maybe? Or?
Now, is this the kind of, we're talking about a laptop?
Yeah.
And this is the card that you plug in the side of the laptop?
Yeah.
So I would say that you're in the wrong area. You've gone to the PCI. I think you want to go to PC.
Card, yeah.
PC card, okay.
Because that's the other name for PCMCI.
Card bus. Card bus. That's all I know it by is card bus.
So one step before this, you said there were two choices.
Okay.
So
PCI cards, it says no information found.
That's not good.
You should bear in mind that not all PC cards, not all laptop plug-in cards will work in the Mac just because you can physically plug them into the Mac. Did it specifically say that it was okay for a Mac?
The guy I bought this computer from was using this exact same system with Digital Performer, which is a completely different audio program.
Gotcha. So it's different audio software apparently did work with this, but that was on his machine, not your machine, right?
It's the same machine
he bought it used.
So
the software is the difference, but the weird thing is we should be seeing it under the hardware profile that Mike sent you to.
Now, on PCs, there are two slots. It looks like one, but there's an upper and a lower slot for a PC card. Is there a second slot that you can, like, pull it out and go down a little bit or pull it out and come up a little bit?
I think it's just one. Yeah.
There's only one.
You mean the expansion deck?
know where this card actually plugs in.
Yeah, there's just one.
You also want to make sure sometimes, and I'm always wary about this, it feels like the card is in place, but you need to push it just that bit further. But you avoid the rubber mallet treatment, but there's a very positive sort of feel thing gets when it finally clicks into place.
Okay. And on a Mac, does it actually go ding and tell you that you've plugged something external in?
Macs don't do anything, Mike. There's no lights, no bells, nothing.
Oh, a lot of times it'll tell you, yes, discover a new port discovered or something to that effect will pop up.
So no recognition of a friendly piece of hardware going in there, huh?
But it should appear in the system profile somewhere under one of those two headings, PCI or PC card.
Yeah, the PCI card is, it says there's one that's called TXN PCI XXXX/00, and then it says type card bus.
That might be it.
And then it says bus, PCI, slot, PC card.
Well, that sounds like a Texas Instruments device.
Okay.
Do we know who made your card?
It's Magma.
Magma. I don't know Magma.
Okay, the Magma card and the PC, it's all one unit. Came with the card, the cable, and the PCI expansion.
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
Just out of curiosity, what exactly is coming out of that card that you're plugging into?
With the PCM CIA card?
Yes.
Okay, that's being plugged into the PCI expansion deck.
And right, and the other end?
And then inside that, I have my Pro Tools card, and then that plugs into the Pro Tools interface.
So this is something to give you access to PC card?
Yeah,
PCI.
Yeah.
Okay, I haven't seen one of these. So the idea is that your laptop's got no place to plug in PCI cards, exactly. So this allows you to do that.
Yeah, it kind of turns my laptop into a tower in a way, so I can go from show to show and record.
Whoa, okay. Interesting.
But he had it working just fine, which is weird, so I'm wondering.
You may want to call, I just found Magma Mobility Electronics online at magma.com, it was magma.com, and now it's taking me to mobl.com. But if you check them out, and they have the PCI Express, this is probably what you're talking about here.
Yeah.
And have you checked with them?
I haven't, no.
Okay, I'd say give them a call and let them know that it did work and it doesn't work and see what's up.
Is there any other PCI cards in this expansion deck than the Pro Tools approved one?
There's three slots on the expansion deck. One has a SCSI hookup.
Okay.
That came with it, and then the two empty ones, and I just stuck them.
I'm counting.
Pro Tools and the other one.
Mike's putting his thumb down about the SCSI thing when you said that. I'm actually counting them. Can it see any of the things in the expansion deck, any of them at all?
See, that's the only thing I have really plugged in is the Pro Tools.
Do you have anything else you can put in there to see if it sees it?
I do have a SCSI drive I could go throw in there.
Right, and we've got frowns all around about SCSI stuff. But hey, we're just checking whether it works, right?
Still the fastest thing out there.
Yeah.
That's it. You're going to have to get back to Magma. It sounds interesting. I hadn't heard of these things before. Just in case you're going too lightweight with a laptop, get back to sort of desktop world with this adapter, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Huh. Yeah, it's really cool. It's going to help the band for sure. But
all right. If we learn any more about it, we will put it up at zen.kvmr.org. Thanks so much, Vic.
Thanks for calling in. Let's take one more quick phone call. We have Jimmy Accardi coming up with the rock and roll party this afternoon. He's in the house. And let me take a moment also to thank for helping to underwrite this past hour of programming, OhmSoft Technologies, serving the KVMR listening area with Internet solutions for home and office, including DSL, roaming dial-up access, domain name registration, secure transaction services, and technical support. Information at OhmSoft.com, OhmSoft, the enlightened Internet solution. And our thanks out to all of you always. We'll take this last phone call, and if you can go very quickly for us, please, we'd really appreciate it. Thanks, caller. You're live on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I have a new Mac OS X, a Jeep, iMac. I'm out here near Scott's Flat, and I can only get about 14 kilobit dial-up speed. I'm wondering, somebody told me about a card I could possibly plug into my computer that would connect with the cell phone system and provide me with a high-speed Internet access through, basically, I'm talking to you on a cell phone right now.
Uh-huh.
Through the same system as that.
Which provider?
Gee, I have Singular or AT&T.
Yeah, right, Apple just put out system updates for three of those providers. I think there's only three left, aren't there? There's AT&T, there's Verizon, and there's what's the
Sprint?
Other
Sprint?
Sprint. Nextel.
What's the hardware though? Because I know in the PC world you've got this laptop PC card thingy.
It's the same. It's the same slot that the previous caller was talking about. There's a slot on the sides for a PCIe, whatever that is.
But different software, Mac software, to make it work, right?
Well, and it's a different and it's a different piece of equipment from each company. It fits in that same slot, but you can't have a Verizon card and have it work on Singular. And
they're all proprietary.
And the issue is the software, though, like we said, because just because you can push a card in there doesn't mean it's going to work. It does need the software and compatibility.
They just released system updates for those.
What I would recommend is you check with your Singular or your cellular provider. Find out if, number one, they have the PC card. Are we talking laptop or desktop?
Actually, right now I have an iMac desktop.
Okay. You might have to get an adapter to put a PC card in it because they're more designed for portable use.
Right.
But check with your Singular service provider, and things are growing in this area because they certainly want everyone's business. What I can tell you that I know through Verizon, it does require a new two-year contract on that item. It's like getting a whole new phone number. You're not getting a phone number, but it's a whole new phone service with a two-year contract.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to run out of here and make room for Jimmy Accardi. Again, Mike, thank you very much for coming in.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And maybe we can have you in again. Your email address, mike@ncitymax.com, and your webpage, ncitymax.com. Paul Castro, Glenn Farr.
This has been the ZenTech Radio Show for the last hour on your community radio station. We'll be back in a couple of weeks, and I'm doing, I think, the next flea market Thursday, 1 to 2, non-tech.
You're doing the next four flea markets.
Whoa.
Thank you very much. I'm going back to Chicago to house sit a great big old scaredy cat Great Dane.
Cool. And they've let me loose on the garden for them as well. Then you'll really see what I don't know. Thanks so much for being here, Mike. It's been a great show, and never let it be said that Macs are not represented on your community radio station. Take it easy. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.